CD 1. How to Train Your Dragon by Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III. Translated from the Old Norse by Cressida Cowell. Read by David Tennant. About the author. How to Train Your Dragon is the first volume of Hiccup's memoirs. He is better known for his great work of natural history, Viking Dragons and Their Eggs, which lists every dragon known to man. He has also published two other non-fiction titles, Learning to Speak Dragonese and Mermaids and Other Monsters, and is a regular writer for Big Dragon Monthly. A note from the author. There were dragons when I was a boy. There were great, grim sky dragons that nested on the cliff tops like gigantic, scary birds. Little, brown, scuttly dragons that hunted down the mice and rats in well-organized packs. Preposterously huge sea dragons that were 20 times as big as the big blue whale and who killed for the fun of it. You'll have to take my word for it. For the dragons are disappearing so fast, they may soon become extinct. Nobody knows what is happening. They're crawling back into the sea from whence they came, leaving not a bone, not a fang in the earth for the men of the future to remember them by. So, in order that these amazing creatures should not be forgotten, I will tell this true story from my childhood. I was not the sort of boy who could train a dragon with the mere lifting of an eyebrow. I was not a natural at the heroism business. I had to work at it. This is the story of becoming a hero the hard way. 1. First, catch your dragon. Long ago, on the wild and windy Isle of Berk, a smallish Viking with a longish name stood up to his ankles in snow. Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III, the hope and heir to the tribe of the Hairy Hooligans, had been feeling slightly sick ever since he woke up that morning. 10 boys, including Hiccup, were hoping to become full members of the tribe by passing the Dragon Initiation Programme. They were standing on a bleak little beach at the bleakest spot on the whole bleak island. A heavy snow was falling.
"Pay attention!"
screamed Gobber the Belch, the soldier in charge of teaching initiation.
"This will be your first military operation, and Hiccup will be commanding the team."
"Oh no, not Hiccup,"
groaned Dog's Breath the Durbrain, and most of the other boys.
"You can't put Hiccup in charge, sir. He's useless."
Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III, the hope and heir to the tribe of the Hairy Hooligans, wiped his nose miserably on his sleeve. He sank a little deeper into the snow.
"Anybody would be better than Hiccup," sneered Snot-Face Snotlout. "Even Fishlegs would be better than Hiccup."
Fishlegs had a squint that made him as blind as a jellyfish and an allergy to reptiles.
"Silence!" roared Gobber the Belch. "The next boy to speak has limpets for lunch for the next 3 weeks."
There was absolute silence immediately. Limpets are a bit like worms and a bit like snot and a lot less tasty than either.
"Hiccup will be in charge and that is an order,"
screamed Gobber, who didn't do noises quieter than screaming. He was a 7-foot giant with a mad glint in his one working eye and a beard like exploding fireworks. Despite the freezing cold, he was wearing hairy shorts and a teeny-weeny deerskin vest that showed off his lobster-red skin and bulging muscles. He was holding a flaming torch in one gigantic fist.
"Hiccup will be leading you, although he is, admittedly, completely useless, because Hiccup is the son of the chief, and that's the way things go with us Vikings. Where do you think you are, the Republic of Rome? Anyway, that is the least of your problems today. You are here to prove yourself as a Viking hero, and it is an ancient tradition of the Hooligan tribe that you should..."
Gobber paused dramatically.
First catch your dragon!
Oh, suffering scallops, thought Hiccup.
Our dragons are what set us apart, bellowed Gobba. Lesser humans train hawks to hunt for them, horses to carry them. It is only the Viking heroes who dare to tame the wildest, most dangerous creatures on earth.
Gobba spat solemnly into the snow.
There are three parts to the dragon initiation test. The first and most dangerous part is a test of your courage and skill at burglary. If you wish to enter the Hairy Hooligan tribe, you must first catch your dragon. And that is why, continued Gobber at full volume, I have brought you to this scenic spot. Take a look at Wild Dragon Cliff itself.
The ten boys tipped their heads backwards. The cliff loomed dizzyingly high above them, black and sinister. In summer you could barely even see the cliff as dragons of all shapes and sizes swarmed over it, snapping and biting and sending up a cacophony of noise that could be heard all over Berk. But in winter the dragons were hibernating and the cliff fell silent, except for the ominous low rumble of their snores. Hiccup could feel the vibrations through his sandals.
Now, said Gobber, do you notice those four caves about halfway up the cliff, grouped roughly in the shape of a skull?
The boys nodded.
Inside the cave that would be the right eye of the skull is the dragon nursery, where there are, at this very moment, 3,000 young dragons having their last few weeks of winter sleep.
Ooh, muttered the boys excitedly. Hiccup swallowed hard. He happened to know considerably more about dragons than anybody else there. Ever since he was a small boy, he'd been fascinated by the creatures. He'd spent hour after long hour dragon-watching in secret. Dragon spotters were thought to be geeks and nerds, hence the need for secrecy. And what Hiccup had learnt about dragons told him that walking into a cave with 3,000 dragons in it was an act of madness. No one else seemed too concerned, however.
In a few minutes, I want you to take one of these baskets and start climbing the cliff, commanded Gobber the Belch. Once you are at the cave entrance, you are on your own. I am too large to squeeze my way into the tunnels that lead to the dragon nursery. You will enter the cave quietly, and that means you too, Warty Hog, unless you want to become the first spring meal for 3,000 hungry dragons.
Gobber laughed heartily at his little joke, then continued,
Dragons this size are normally fairly harmless to man, but in these numbers they will set upon you like piranhas. There'd be nothing left of even a fatso like you, Warty Hog. Just a pile of bones in your helmet. So, you will walk quietly through the cave, and each boy will steal one sleeping dragon. Lift the dragon gently from the rock and place it in your basket. Any questions so far?
Nobody had any questions.
In the unlikely event that you do wake the dragons, and you would have to be idiotically stupid to do so, run like thunder for the entrance to the cave. Dragons do not like cold weather, and the snow will probably stop them in their tracks.
Probably, thought Hiccup. Oh, well, that's reassuring.
I suggest that you spend a little time choosing your dragon. It is important to get one the correct size. This will be the dragon that hunts fish for you and pulls down deer for you. You will catch the dragon that will carry you into battle later on when you're much older and a warrior of the tribe. But nonetheless, you want an impressive animal. So a rough guide would be, choose the biggest creature that will fit into your basket. Don't linger for too long in there.
Linger, thought Hiccup, in a cave full of 3,000 sleeping dragons.
I need not tell you, Gobber continued cheerfully, that if you return to this spot without a dragon, it is hardly worth coming back at all. Anybody who fails this task will be put into immediate exile. The Hairy Hooligan tribe has no use for failures. Only the strong can belong.
Unhappily, Hiccup looked round at the distant horizon. Nothing but snow and sea as far as the eye could see. Exile didn't look too promising either.
Right, said Gobber, briskly. Each boy take a basket to put their dragon in and we'll get going.
The boys rushed to get their baskets, chattering happily and excitedly. I'm going to get one of those monstrous nightmare ones with the extra extendable claws. They are really scary, boasted Snotlout.
Oh, shut up, Snotlout, you can't, said Speedyfist. Only Hiccup can have a monstrous nightmare. You have to be the son of a chief.
Hiccup's father was Stoic the Vast, the fearsome chief of the Hairy Hooligan tribe.
Hiccup, sneered Snotlout. If he's as useless at this as he is at Bashy Ball, we'll be lucky if he even gets one of the basic browns.
The basic brown was the most common type of dragon, a serviceable beast, but without much glamour. Viking Dragons and Their Eggs 1. The Common or Garden and the Basic Brown. The Common or Garden and the Basic Brown are so similar that they can be dealt with together. They are the most familiar breeds, the ones we instantly think of when we say dragons. They are poor hunters, but they are easy to train. These dragons are the best kind for family pets, although, as with a lion or a tiger, they should never be left unsupervised with very young children. Statistics. Colours. Green and yellow, all shades of brown. Armed with, basic teeth and claws, score 3. Defences, prickly spines, score 2. Radar, none, score 0. Poison, none, score 0. Hunting ability, lethargic hunters, score 3. Speed, swift in retreat, score 8. Fear and fight factor, well when angry, score 4. Total score, 20.
Shut up and get into line, you miserable tadpoles, yelled Gobber the Belch.
The boys scrambled into their places, baskets on their backs, and stood to attention. Gobber walked along the line, lighting the torch that each boy held in front of him from the great flare in his hand.
In half an hour's time you will be a Viking warrior, with your faithful serpent at your side. Or breakfasting with Woden in Valhalla with dragon's teeth in your bottom, screamed Gobber with horrible enthusiasm. Death or glory, yelled Gobber.
Death or glory, yelled 8 boys back at him fanatically.
Death, thought Hiccup and Fishlegs, sadly. Gobber paused dramatically with the horn to his lips. I think this could possibly be the worst moment of my life so far, thought Hiccup to himself as he waited for the blast of the horn. And if they shout much louder, we're going to wake up those dragons before we even start.
Parp!
Gobber blew the horn. Inside the Dragon Nursery. You've probably guessed by now that Hiccup was not your natural Viking hero. For a start, he didn't look like a hero. Somebody like Snotlout, for instance, was tall, muscly, covered in skeleton tattoos, and already had the beginnings of a small moustache. This consisted of a few straggly yellow hairs clinging to his upper lip and was deeply unpleasant to look at, but still impressively manly for a boy not yet 13. Hiccup was on the small side, and had the kind of face that was almost entirely unmemorable. He did have heroic hair, which was a very bright red and stood up vertically, however much you tried to wet it down with seawater. But nobody ever saw that, because it was hidden under his helmet most of the time. You would never have picked Hiccup out of those 10 boys to be the hero of this story. Snotlight was good at everything, and a natural leader. Dog's Breath was as tall as his father and could do amusing things, like farting to the tune of the Berk National Anthem. Hiccup was just absolutely average. The kind of unremarkable, skinny, freckled boy who was easy to overlook in a crowd. So when Gobber blew the horn and moved out of sight to find a comfortable rock to sit on and eat his mussel and tomato sandwich, Snotlout pushed Hiccup out of the way and took charge.
"Okay, listen up, boys," he whispered in a menacing fashion. "I'm in charge, not the useless, and anybody who objects gets a knuckle sandwich from Dog's Breath the Durbrain."
"Ugh,"
grunted Dog's Breath, pounding his fists together in happy excitement. Dog's Breath was Snotlout's chief sidekick and a great big gorilla of a boy.
"Bash him, Dog's Breath, to show what I mean."
Dog's Breath was delighted to oblige. He gave Hiccup a shove that sent him sprawling head first into the snow, then ground his face in it.
"Pay attention," hissed Snotlout.
The boys dragged their eyes away from Dog's Breath and Hiccup and paid attention.
"Rope yourselves together. The best climber should go first."
"Well,
"That's you, of course, Snotlout," said Fishlegs. "You're the best at everything, aren't you?"
Snotlout looked at Fishlegs suspiciously. It was difficult to tell whether Fishlegs was laughing at him or not, because of his squint.
"That's right, Fishlegs," said Snotlout. "I am."
And just in case he had been laughing at him,
"Bash him, Dog's Breath."
While Dog's Breath pushed Fishlegs down to join Hiccup in the snow, Snotlout bossily ordered everybody to rope themselves together. Hiccup and Fishlegs were the last to be tied on, just behind a flushed and triumphant Dog's Breath.
"Oh, brilliant," muttered Fishlegs. "I'm about to enter a cave full of man-eating reptiles tied up to 8 complete maniacs."
"If we get to the cave," said Hiccup nervously, looking up at the sheer black cliff. Hiccup put the lighted torch between his teeth to leave his hands free and started climbing after the others. It was a perilous climb. The rocks were slippery with snow and the other boys were thoroughly overexcited, making the ascent far too quickly. At one point, Clueless missed his footing and fell, luckily onto Dog's Breath, who caught him by the back of the trousers and heaved him back onto the rock again before he brought the whole lot of them down. When they finally made it to the mouth of the cave, Hiccup looked down briefly at the sea pounding the rocks way below and swallowed very hard.
"Untie the ropes," ordered Snotlout, his eyes popping with excitement at the thought of the dangers to come. "Hiccup goes into the cave first because he is the son of the chief," he sneered, "and if any of the dragons are awake, he'll be the first to know about it. Once we're in the cave, it's every man for himself. Only the strong can belong."
Although he wasn't your usual mindless thug of a hooligan, Hiccup wasn't a wimp either. Being frightened is not the same as being a coward. Maybe he was as brave as anyone else there because he went to catch a dragon despite knowing what dragons are like. And when he had climbed perilously to the mouth of the cave and had found that inside there was a long, twisty tunnel, he still went down it, despite not being too keen on long, twisty tunnels with dragons at the end of them. The tunnel was dripping and clammy. At times it was high enough for the boys to walk upright. Then it would close down into narrow, claustrophobic holes that the boys could only just squeeze through, squirming on their stomachs with the flares held in their mouths. After 10 long minutes of walking and crawling into the heart of the cliff, the stench of dragon, a salty stink of seaweed and old mackerel heads, got stronger and stronger until finally it became unbearable and the tunnel opened out into a ginormous cavern. The cavern was full of more dragons than Hiccup could ever have imagined existed. They were every possible colour and size, and they included all the species that Hiccup had heard of, and quite a few more that he hadn't. Hiccup started sweating as he looked around him at pile after pile of the animals, draped over every available surface, even hanging upside down from the roof like giant bats. They were all fast asleep, and most of them were snoring in unison. This was a sound so loud and so deep that it seemed to penetrate right into Hiccup's body and vibrate around his soft insides, churning his stomach and bowels and forcing his heart to beat at the same slow dragon pulse. If one, just one of these countless creatures were to wake up, it would raise the alarm to the others and the boys would meet a horrible death. Hiccup had once seen a deer that had wandered too close to Wild Dragon Cliff, torn to pieces in a matter of minutes. Hiccup closed his eyes. "I will not think about it," he said to himself. "I will not." None of the other boys were thinking about it. Ignorance is very useful in such circumstances. Their eyes were popping with excitement as they walked through the cave, hands over their noses to keep out the revolting smell, looking for the biggest dragon they could find that would fit in their basket. They left the torches in a pile at the entrance. The cavern was already well lit by the glowworms, huge sluggish animals dotted here and there, that shone with a steady yet dim fluorescence, like a low-watt light bulb. And the flame huffers gave off extra little bursts of light that flickered on and off as they breathed in and out. Predictably, most of the boys headed towards the plug uglies of the dragon world. Snotlout made a big fuss about grabbing a vicious-looking monstrous nightmare, smiling nastily at Hiccup as he did so. Snotlout was the son of Baggy Bum the Beer Belly, Stoic the Vast's younger brother. He was intending to get rid of Hiccup sometime in the future, so that he, Snotlout, would become chief of the Hairy Hooligan tribe. And a gruesome and terrifying chief as Snotlout meant to be would need a properly awesome dragon. Wartyhog and Dogsbreath got into a loudly whispered fight over a Gronkle, a heavily armoured brute with fangs like kitchen knives, sticking out in such numbers that it couldn't keep its mouth shut. Dogsbreath won, then managed to drop it as he was trying to bundle it into his basket. The weaponry of the beast made a horribly loud clatter as it landed on the floor of the cavern. The Gronkle opened its evil crocodile eyes. Everybody held their breath. The Gronkle stared ahead. It was difficult to tell from its blank expression whether it was awake or fast asleep. Hiccup realised, in an agony of suspense, that the gossamer-thin third eyelid was still down. And there it stayed for a few heart-stopping moments until it slowly closed its upper eyelids again. Amazingly, not one of the other dragons woke up. A few grumbled groggily before making themselves comfy again, but most were in such a stupor that they barely even stirred. Hiccup let out his breath slowly. Maybe these dragons were so dead to the world that nothing could wake them. He swallowed hard, muttered a prayer to Loki, the patron saint of sneaky exploits, and edged forward cautiously to grab the most unconscious-looking dragon so he could get out of this nightmare as fast as possible. Viking dragons and their eggs, too. The Gronkle. The Gronkle is the plug-ugly of the dragon world, but what it lacks in looks, it makes up for on the battlefield. They can be slow and, dare I say it, stupid, and sometimes they get so fat that they are unable to take off. They are also prone to dragon acne. Statistics. Colours. Snot green, bogey beige, pooey brown. Armed with all the best in dragon weaponry. Fangs like daggers, extra spike on the neck, ball with spikes on end of tail. Score 8. Defences. Super thick, flame-proof and scratch-proof skin. Score 9. Radar, none. Score 0. Poison, none. Score 0. Hunting ability, Gronkles are slow to manoeuvre in the air. Score 0. Speed, see above. Score 5. Fear and fight factor, terrifying in action. Score 9. Total score, 31. It is a little known fact that dragons grow colder the deeper they sleep. It is even possible for a dragon to go into a sleep coma in which they are icy cold, with no obvious pulse or breath or heartbeat. They can stay in this state for centuries, and only a highly skilled expert can tell from looking at them if they are alive or dead. But a dragon who is awake or lightly sleeping is very warm indeed, like bread that has just come out of the oven. Hiccup found one that was about the right size and fairly cool to the touch, and manoeuvred it into his basket as quickly and as carefully as he could. It was a very basic, basic brown, but at that moment Hiccup could not have cared less. Even though it was barely half grown, it was surprisingly heavy. "I did it! I did it! I did it!" he chanted happily to himself. At least he wasn't going to be the only boy in the class who didn't have a dragon. Everybody seemed to have got themselves one by now, and they were all making their way quietly towards the exit. Everybody, that was, except for Fishlegs, who was already covered in bright red itchy rash and was, at that very moment, approaching a pile of knotty entangled nadders on very loud tiptoes. Fishlegs was even worse at burglary than Dogsbreath. Hiccup stopped dead in his tracks. "Don't do it, Fishlegs. Please don't do it," he whispered. But Fishlegs was fed up of Snotlout's taunting and of being sneered at and jeered at. He was going to get himself a really cool dragon that all the other boys would respect. Squinting so hard he could barely see the pile of dragons, his eyes streaming and scratching himself violently, Fishlegs reached slowly towards the bottommost dragon, took one leg in his hand, and gently yanked. The entire pile came crashing down in a furious tangle of limbs and wings and ears. Every boy in the cavern gave a horrified gasp. Most of the nadders snapped crossly at each other before settling back down to sleep. One brute, bigger than the others, opened his eyes and blinked a few times. Hiccup noted with great relief that the third eyelid was still down. The boys waited for the eyes to close. And then Fishlegs sneezed. Four gigantic sneezes that went echoing and bouncing off the cavern walls. The big nadder stared sightlessly ahead, frozen like a dragon statue. But very faintly, an ominous purring noise began in his throat. And very slowly, the third eyelid slid upward.
"Uh-oh," whispered Hiccup.
The nadder's head suddenly whipped round to face Fishlegs, its yellow cat's eyes snapping into focus on the boy. It unfolded its wings to their greatest extent and stealthily advanced, like a panther about to spring. It opened its mouth wide enough to show the forked dragon tongue and... "Run!" shouted Hiccup, grabbing Fishlegs' arm and dragging him away. The boys ran for the exit tunnel. Fishlegs and Hiccup were the last to get there. There was no time to pick up the torches, so they were running in the pitch dark. The basket with the basic brown dragon in it was bumping on Hiccup's back. They had 2 minutes start on the dragons because it took a while for the first dragon to wake everybody else up, but Hiccup could hear a furious roaring and flapping as the dragons started to pour into the tunnel after the boys. He ran a little faster. The dragons could move more quickly than the boys because they could see better in the dark, but they were held up when the tunnel got smaller because they had to fold their wings up to squirm through.
"I haven't got a dragon,"
panted Fishlegs a couple of paces behind Hiccup. "That," said Hiccup as he scrambled frantically on his elbows through a narrow bit, "is the least, ow, of our problems. They're gaining on us."
"No, dragon,"
repeated Fishlegs stubbornly. "Oh, for Thor's sake," snapped Hiccup. He thrust his basket into Fishlegs' arms and grabbed the empty one from Fishlegs' back. "Have mine then, wait here." And Hiccup turned and went back through the narrow bit, even though the roaring was getting louder and closer by the second.
"What are you doing?"
screamed Fishlegs, frantically dancing up and down on the spot. Hiccup came back through the hole again precious moments later. Fishlegs grabbed hold of an arm to help haul him through. They could hear a horrible snuffling as what sounded like the nose of a dragon entered the other end of the hole. Hiccup bunged a rock at it and it squealed indignantly. They turned a corner and suddenly they could see light from outside at the end of the final tunnel. Fishlegs went first, but just as Hiccup was kneeling down to follow, a dragon pounced on him with a flap and a shriek. Hiccup hit it and it fell back, enough for him to crawl towards the light. Another dragon, or maybe the same one, sank its fangs into Hiccup's calf. He was so desperate to get out, he dragged the animal through with him. As soon as Hiccup's head and shoulders were through into the light, there was Gobber. He grabbed Hiccup under the armpits and hauled him out, dragons pouring out after him. "Jump!" yelled Gobber as he stunned a dragon with one blow of his mighty fist. "What do you mean, jump?" Hiccup hesitated as he looked down at the dizzying drop into the sea.
"No time to climb down,"
panted Gobber, banging a couple of dragons' heads together and bouncing three more off his gigantic belly.
"Jump!"
Hiccup closed his eyes and leapt off the cliff. As he plunged through the air, the dragon that was attached to his leg released its jaws with a squawk of alarm and flew off. Hiccup was travelling at such speed by the time he hit the water that it didn't feel like water at all. More like something hard and painful and so cold that he nearly passed out. He spluttered to the surface, amazed to find that he didn't appear to be dead, and was immediately drenched by the gigantic splash of Gobber the Belch landing a couple of feet away from him. Shrieking furiously, the dragon swarmed out of the cave and dive-bombed the floating Vikings. Hiccup pulled his helmet down as far as it would go. There were horrible scraping sounds as dragon's talons raked across the metal. Another one landed hissing on the water right in front of Hiccup's face. It took off again with a screech when it felt how cold the sea was. The dragons didn't like flying through the snow and, with relief, Hiccup watched as they flew back to scream terrible dragon insults in dragonese from the warmth of the cave entrance. Gobber started to pull the boys out of the sea and onto the rocks. Viking boys are strong swimmers, but it's difficult to keep afloat when you have a basket full of trapped, terrified dragon on your back. Hiccup was the last to be saved, just in time, as the cold was beginning to put him to sleep. Well, at least that wasn't death, thought Hiccup, as Gobber grabbed him by the neck to rescue him, nearly drowning him again in the process. But it certainly wasn't glory, either. Three. Heroes or Exiles. The boys scrambled over the slimy pebbles at the edge of the beach and back up Madman's Gully, the gorge they had climbed through a couple of hours before. This was a narrow crack in the cliffs filled with large rocks. They tried to move as quickly as they could, but this is difficult when you're slipping and sliding over huge stones covered in ice, and they made painfully slow progress. A dragon that hadn't been put off by the snow came shrieking down into the gorge. He landed on Wartyhog's back and started savaging him, sinking his fangs into Wartyhog's shoulder and ripping red lines into his arms. Gobber bashed the dragon on the nose with the handle of his axe, and the dragon let go and flapped away. But a whole wave of dragons replaced him, pouring into the canyon with awful, rasping cries, fire shooting from their nostrils and melting the snow before them. Talons spread wickedly as they swooped downward. Gobber stood, legs wide apart, and whirled his big double-headed axe. He threw back his great hairy head and yelled a terrible primeval yell that echoed down the sides of the gorge and made the hairs on the back of Hiccup's neck stick straight up like the spines on a sea urchin. Individually, dragons tend to have a healthy sense of self-preservation, but they are braver when they hunt in packs. They knew now that they had the advantage of massive numbers, so they didn't check their flying for an instant. They just kept on coming. Gobber let go of the axe. Spinning end to end, the axe soared up through the softly falling snow. It hit the biggest dragon of the lot, killing him instantly, and then carried on going, landing in a snowdrift hundreds of feet away and disappearing. This made the rest of the dragons think a bit. Some of them scrambled over each other in their haste to fly away, yelping like dogs. The others came to a halt, hovering uncertainly, screaming defiance but keeping their distance.
"Waste of a good axe," grunted Gobber. "Keep going, boys, they could come back."
Hiccup needed no encouragement to keep going. As soon as he got out of the gorge and onto the marshy land behind it, he broke into a stumbling run, every now and then falling flat on his face in the snow. Sometime later, when Gobber reckoned they were a safe distance from Wild Dragon Cliff, he yelled at the boys to stop. Very carefully, he counted heads again, to check he hadn't lost anybody. Gobber had spent an unpleasant 10 minutes standing at the mouth of the dragon's cave, wondering why there was such a terrible racket, and what he was going to say to Stoic the Vast if he lost his precious son and heir for good. Something tactful and sensitive, he supposed. But tact and sensitivity were not Gobber's strong points, and he took the first 5 minutes to come up with,
"Hiccup copped it. Sorry,"
and then spent the second 5 minutes tearing his beard out. Consequently, although secretly mightily relieved, he was not in a good mood, and as soon as he could get his breath back, he exploded all over the place as the boys stood shivering violently in a bedraggled line.
"Never in 14 years have I come across such a load of hopeless barnacles as you lot. Which of you useless mollusks was responsible for waking up the dragons?"
"I was," said Hiccup, which wasn't strictly true.
"Oh, that's brilliant," bellowed Gobber. "Just brilliant. Our future leader shows off his magnificent leadership skills. At the tender age of 10 and a half, he does his best to annihilate himself and the rest of you in a simple military exercise."
Snotlout sniggered.
"You find something amusing about that, Snotlout?"
asked Gobber with dangerous softness.
"Everybody is on limpet rations for the next 3 weeks!"
The boys groaned. "Smart work, Hiccup," sneered Snotlout. "I can't wait to see you in action on the battlefield."
"Silence!" yelled Gobber. "This is your initiation, not a day out in the country! Silence or you'll be lunching on lugworms for the rest of your lives!" "Now," continued Gobber, more calmly, "although that was an absolute mess, it wasn't a total disaster. I presume that you do all have a dragon after that fiasco?"
Yes, chorused the boys. Fishlegs took a sideways glance at Hiccup, who was staring straight ahead.
Lucky for you, said Gobor ominously. So you have all passed the first part of the dragon test. There are, however, still two parts that you have to complete before you can become full members of the tribe. Your next task will be to train this dragon yourself. This will be a test of the force of your personality. You will assert your will over this wild creature and show it who is master. Your dragon will be expected to obey simple commands such as go and stay and hunt fish for you in the way that dragons have hunted for the sons of Thor since anybody can remember. If you are worried about the training process, you should study a book called How to Train Your Dragon by Professor Jobbish, which you will find in the fireplace of the Great Hall.
Suddenly, Gobor looked very pleased with himself.
I stole that book from the Meathead Public Library myself, he said, modestly regarding his very black fingernails, from right under the nose of the hairy, scary librarian. He never noticed a thing. Now that's burglary for you.
Wartyhog put up his hand. What happens if we can't read, sir?
No boasting, Wartyhog, boomed Gobber. Get some idiot to read it for you. Your dragons will begin to go back to sleep, because this is still their hibernation time.
Some of the dragons had, indeed, gone very quiet inside the baskets.
So take them home and put them in a warm place. They should wake up in the next couple of weeks. You will then have only 4 months to prepare for initiation day at the Thursday celebrations and the final part of your test. If on that day, you can prove that you have trained your dragon to the satisfaction of myself and other elders of the tribe, you can finally call yourself a hooligan of Berk.
The boys stood very tall and tried to look like proper hooligans.
Heroes or exile! Yelled Gobber the Belch. Heroes or exile! Yelled 8 boys fanatically back at him.
Exile, thought Hiccup and Fishlegs, sadly.
I hate being a Viking,
panted Fishlegs to Hiccup as they stumbled back through the bracken to the hooligan village. You didn't really walk on the island of Berk. You waded through heather or bracken or mud or snow that clung onto your legs and made them difficult to lift. It was the sort of country where the sea and the land were always falling into one another and getting mixed up. The island was shot through with holes burrowed by the water, a maze of crisscrossing underground streams. You could put your foot on a solid-looking piece of grass and find yourself disappearing up to your thigh in black, sticky mud. You could be making your way through the ferns and suddenly find yourself fording a river, waist-high and icy cold. The boys were already soaked to the skin with seawater, and now the snow had turned to horizontal driving rain, blowing in their faces with the strength of one of the gale-force winds that were always shrieking across the salty wastelands of Berk.
A narrow escape from horrible death, first thing on Thursday morning, complained Fishlegs, followed by complete rejection by the junior half of the tribe. Nobody's going to talk to me for years after this, except for you, of course, Hiccup, but then you're just a weirdo like me.
Thank you, said Hiccup.
And on top of everything, continued Fishlegs bitterly, a 2-mile run carrying a deranged dragon on my back.
The basket on Fishlegs' back was plunging wildly from side to side as the dragon inside tried manically to get out.
And only a dinner of horrible limpets to look forward to at the end of it.
Hiccup agreed that it wasn't a delicious prospect.
You can have this dragon back if you like, Hiccup. I warn you, they're filthy heavy when they're wet and cross, said Fishlegs, miserably. Gobber is going to go off like a typhoon when he finds out you haven't got a dragon.
But I have got one, said Hiccup. Fishlegs stopped and began to take the basket off his back.
I know, it is yours, really, he sighed wearily. I think I'll just go straight past the village and keep on running till I reach somewhere civilised. Rome, perhaps. I've always wanted to go to Rome. And I haven't got a hope in Valhalla of passing initiation anyway, so...
No, I've got another one in my basket, Hiccup insisted. Fishleg's jaw dropped open in disbelief. I got it when I went back into the tunnel, explained Hiccup.
Well, blister my barnacles, said Fishlegs. How in Thor's name did you know it was there? It was so dark you couldn't see the horns in front of you.
It was weird, said Hiccup. I sort of sensed it when we were running down the tunnel. I couldn't see anything, but as we were passing, I just knew there was a dragon there, and that it was meant to be my dragon. I was going to ignore it, actually, because we were in a bit of a hurry, but then you said about not having a dragon, and I went back, and there it was, lying on the shelf in the tunnel, just as I'd imagined it would be.
Well, jigger my jellyfish, said Fishlegs,
and the boys started running again. Hiccup was bruised all over, shaking from shock, and he had a nasty dragon wound in his calf which was stinging like crazy from the salt water. He was freezing cold, and there was an irritating bit of seaweed in one of his sandals. He was also a bit worried because he knew he should not have risked his life trying to get a dragon for Fishlegs. That was not the act of a Viking hero. A Viking hero would know not to intervene between Fishlegs and his fate. On the other hand, Hiccup had been worrying about dragon-catching day for longer than he could remember. He had been sure he would be the only one to come back without a dragon, and shame, embarrassment, and awful exile would follow. And now, here he was, a Viking warrior with a dragon. So, on the whole, he was feeling fairly pleased with himself. Things were looking up.
You know, Hiccup, said Fishlegs a little later, as the wooden fortifications of the village appeared on the horizon. That sounds like fate, you sensing the dragon was there like that. This could be meant to be. You could have some sort of wonder dragon in there, something that makes a monstrous nightmare look like a flying frog. You are the son and heir of Chief Stoic, after all, and it's about time fate came in with a sign about your destiny.
The boys stopped, puffing with exhaustion. Oh, I'm sure it's just a commoner garden that wandered away from the rest, said Hiccup, trying to sound careless but unable to keep the excitement out of his voice. He could have something marvellous in there. Maybe old Wrinkley was right. Old Wrinkley was Hiccup's grandfather on his mother's side. He had taken up soothsaying in his old age, and he kept on telling Hiccup how he had looked into the future and that Hiccup was destined for great things. This amazing dragon could be the beginning of his transformation from ordinary old Hiccup, who wasn't particularly good at anything, into a hero of the future. Hiccup took the basket off his back and paused before opening it.
It's very still, isn't it? Said Fishlegs,
suddenly less certain of the fate theory.
I mean, it isn't moving at all in there. Are you sure it's alive?
It's just very deeply asleep, said Hiccup. It was stone cold when I picked it up. Suddenly, he had a strong feeling that the gods were on his side. He knew that this dragon was alive. With trembling fingers, Hiccup undid the latch, took off the lid of the basket, and peered in. Fishlegs joined him.
Things weren't looking so good anymore. There, curled up fast asleep in the bottom of the basket, in a tangled dragon knot, lay perhaps the most commoner garden dragon Hiccup had ever seen. Absolutely the only extraordinary thing about this dragon was how extraordinarily small it was. In this, it was truly extraordinary. Most dragons that the Vikings used for hunting purposes were about the size of a Labrador dog. The adolescent dragons the boys were collecting weren't quite that big, but they were nearly fully grown. This dragon was more comparable to a West Highland Terrier. Hiccup couldn't think how he had overlooked this when he picked the dragon up in the tunnel. He supposed, miserably, that it was rather a pressured moment, what with 3,000 dragons trying to kill him at the time, and dragons in a deep sleep coma do tend to weigh more than they do when they're awake. Well, said Hiccup at last, that's a sign, if you like. You reach for a deadly nadder, and what do you get? A basic brown. I grab a dragon in the dark, and what do I get? A commoner garden. The thing is, the gods are telling us we are commoner garden folk, Fishlegs. You and I, we're not meant to be heroes.
It doesn't matter about me, said Fishlegs. But you are meant to be a hero, remember? Son of the chief and all that. And you will be one, I know you will.
Fishlegs put the basket back on Hiccup's back, and they trudged towards the village gates together.
"At least, I sincerely hope you will. I don't want to be following Snotlout into battle. You've got more ideas about military tactics in your little finger than Snotlout has in his whole fat head."
While that may have been true, not only was Hiccup not about to be the future star of dragon training, but with this particular dragon, it was even going to be difficult for him to take his familiar place fading into the background. It was so small, it was going to make him look ridiculous. It was so small that Snotlout was going to have some very unpleasant things to say about it. Viking Dragons and Their Eggs 3. The Monstrous Nightmare. The Monstrous Nightmare is the largest and most terrifying of the domestic dragons. Dazzling flyers, magnificent hunters, and fearsome fighters, they can be wild and difficult to train. By unofficial Viking law, only a chief or the son of a chief can own one. Statistics. Colours: emerald green, brilliant scarlet, deepest purple. Armed with: scary fangs, extra extendable claws, score 9. Defences: nightmares don't need defences, score 2. Radar: none, score 0. Poison: bite is slightly poisonous, score 3. Hunting ability: amazing to watch, score 10. Speed: fast, score 7. Fear and fight factor: very, very scary, score 10. Total score: 41. Four. How to train your dragon.
Ha 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 ha!
Snotlout was laughing so hard that he hadn't managed to say anything at all. The boys were hanging about the village gates, taking the opportunity to show off the dragons that they had caught. Hiccup had tried to walk through without being noticed, but Snotlout had stopped him.
"Let's see what pathetic creature Hiccup has got," said Snotlout, and took off the lid. "Oh, this is brilliant. Look at it," said Snotlout when he finally got his breath back from laughing. "What is it, Hiccup? An ickle brown bunny rabbit with wings? A flower fairy? A fluffy flying frog? Gather round, everybody, and see the magnificent animal that our future leader has caught himself." "Oh, Hiccup, you are useless," crowed Speedy Fist. "You're the son of a chief, for Thor's sake. Why didn't you get one of those new monstrous nightmares with a 6-foot wingspan and the extra extendable claws? They are really mean killers, they are."
"I have one," grinned Snotlout, gesturing to the terrifying-looking flame-red animal fast asleep in his basket. "I think I shall call her Fireworm."
"What are you going to call yours, Hiccup?"
"Sweetums? Sugar Lips? Babyface?"
Hiccup's dragon took this particular moment to give a huge yawn, opening his tiny mouth wide to reveal a flickering forked tongue, very pink gums, and absolutely no teeth at all. Snotlout laughed so hard Dog's Breath had to hold him upright.
"Toothless!" cried Snotlout. "Hiccup has found himself the only toothless dragon in the uncivilized world. This is too good. Hiccup the useless and his dragon toothless."
Fishlegs leapt to Hiccup's defence.
"Well, you're not allowed that monstrous nightmare that you've got there, Snotface Snotlout. Only the son of a chief is allowed a monstrous nightmare. That fireworm dragon is Hiccup's by right."
Snotlout's eyes narrowed. He grabbed Fishleg's arm and twisted it viciously behind his back.
"Nobody's listening to you, you plankton-hearted, fish-legged disaster area," sneered Snotlout. "Thanks to you and your snivelling, sneezing disability, that whole military operation was nearly a total disaster. When I'm chief of this tribe, the first thing I'm going to do is boot anybody with a pathetic allergy like yours straight out into exile. You're not fit to be a hooligan."
Fishlegs went very white in the face, but he still managed to gasp out,
"But you are not going to be chief of this tribe. Hiccup is going to be chief of this tribe."
Snotlout dropped Fishleg's arm and advanced menacingly on Hiccup.
"Oh, he is he? jeered Snotlout. So I'm not allowed that monstrous nightmare, am I? Our future leader is keeping very quiet about it, isn't he? Come on, Hiccup. I'm stealing your inheritance. What are you going to do about it then, eh?
The boys all looked solemn. Snotlout really had broken an ancient Viking rule.
Hiccup should challenge you for the dragon, said Fishleg slowly.
And everybody swivelled round to look expectantly at Hiccup.
Oh, brilliant, muttered Hiccup under his breath. Thank you, Fishlegs. My day just gets better and better.
Snotlout was a great brute of a boy who didn't really need Dog's Breath's help when it came to bashing people up. He wore specially constructed bronze-tipped sandals in order to cause maximum damage when kicking people. Hiccup tried to stay out of his way as much as he possibly could, but he couldn't ignore this insult to his status. Now, Fishlegs had helpfully pointed it out, without looking like a coward in front of the other boys. And if you got known as a coward in the hooligan tribe, you might as well go the whole hog and wear a pale pink jerkin, take up playing the harp and change your name to Ermintrude.
I challenge you, Snotface Snotlout, for the dragon fireworm who is mine by right, said Hiccup,
trying to hide his reluctance by speaking as loudly and formally as he could.
I accept your challenge, said Snotlout super fast, grinning all over his horrid smug face. Axes or fists?
Fists, said Hiccup, because axes were a really bad idea.
I shall look forward to showing you how a real future hero fights, said Snotlout.
And then he remembered something.
After the initiation thing on Thursday, though. I don't want to stub my toe or anything while I'm kicking you all around the village.
Hiccup might win, Fishlegs pointed out.
Of course he won't win, boasted Snotlout. Look at my sporting ability, my Viking courage, my capacity for mindless violence. I shall win just as surely as I shall be chief of this tribe one day. I mean, look at my dragon and then look at his dragon, he pointed mockingly at Toothless. The gods have spoken. It's only a matter of time. In the meantime, Snotlout carried on, I shall live in fear of being gummed to death by Hiccup's terrifying toothless terrapin.
And Snotlout sauntered off in a lordly fashion, giving Hiccup a nasty kick on the shins as he did so.
Sorry about the challenge, Fishlegs apologised, after they had left the baskets with the dragons in them under their beds at their homes.
Oh, don't worry about it, said Hiccup.
Somebody would have got me to do it anyway. You know how they all love a fight.
Fishlegs and Hiccup were going to the Great Hall to look for the book Gobber had recommended, How to Train Your Dragon, by Professor Yobish. As it happens, confided Hiccup, I know a bit about dragons already, but I haven't the foggiest clue how to start training one. I would have said they were virtually untrainable. I'm really looking forward to getting some tips.
The Great Hall was a hullabaloo of young barbarians fighting, yelling, and playing the popular Viking game of bashy ball, which was a very violent contact sport with lots of contact and very few rules.
Hiccup and Fishlegs found the book tucked away in the fireplace, practically in the fire. Hiccup had never noticed it before. He opened the book. I have included a basic replica of How to Train Your Dragon by Professor Yobish here, in order that you can share the experience with Hiccup of opening that book for the first time, full of hope and interest and expectation. You will have to imagine that the cover is unusually thick, with huge golden clasps, and that some scribe has covered it in elaborately fancy gilt lettering. It looks very inviting indeed.
How to Train Your Dragon by Professor Yobish, BA, MA, ONS, CANTAB, etc. Big Axe Books. 10th Anniversary Edition. Winner of the Best Book for Barbarians Gold Award. How would you train a dragon? Look inside for all the answers in Professor Yobish's hugely entertaining and informative book. Follow his simple advice and you will soon be on your way to becoming the hero you've always wanted to be. Praise for How to Train Your Dragon. This book changed my life, Squidface the Terrible. A brilliant book, The Meathead Monthly. Nobody yells better than Professor Yobish. This is a sensitive and well-researched book that contains all the information you need to turn your dragon into a pussycat.
the Hooligan Observer. Yobbish is a genius, the Viking Times. Price, one small chicken, 20 oysters. This book is dedicated to Mummy, with love from your dearest Yob. Copyright Professor Yobbish, Dark Ages. The publishers, Big Axe Books, would like to point out that they take no responsibility whatsoever for any injuries that may occur as a result of any person or persons following the advice given in this book. Thank you for your attention. Page 1. Meathead Public Library. A note from the Hairy Scary Librarian. Please return this book on or before the last date stamped, or I will be very annoyed. I think you know what I mean. Do not remove this book or we will bash you. Page 2. About the author. Professor Yobbish, B.A., M.A., Ons, Cantab, etc., has spent many years in the wild observing dragons in their natural habitat. This book is the culmination of his research, and it is the definitive textbook on the subject of these fascinating creatures. Professor Yobbish lives alone in a cave on the Isle of Doom. He is the author of Looking After Your Killer Whale and Sharks and Other Great Pets. He is currently writing a book about butterflies. Page 3. Chapter the First and Last. The golden rule of dragon training is to yell at it. The louder the better. The end. That's it, said Hiccup furiously, turning the book upside down and shaking it, trying to see whether there was anything other than that single page of paper inside it. Hiccup put the book down. His face was unusually grim. Okay, Fishlegs, he said. Unless you're any better at yelling than I am, we're on our own. We're going to have to work out our own method of dragon training. Five. A chat with Old Wrinkly. The next morning, Hiccup checked the dragon under his bed. It was still asleep. When his mother, Valhalla Rama, asked him at breakfast, "How did initiation go yesterday, dear?" Hiccup said, "Oh, it was fine. I caught my dragon." "That's nice, dear," Valhalla Rama replied vaguely. Stoic the Vast looked up briefly from his bowl and boomed, "Excellent! Excellent!" before getting back to the important task of shoveling food into his mouth. After breakfast, Hiccup went to sit on the front step beside his grandfather, who was smoking a pipe. It was a beautiful, cold, clear winter's morning, with not a breath of wind, and the sea all around as flat as glass. Old Wrinkly blew out smoke rings contentedly as he watched the sun coming up. Hiccup shivered and chucked stones into the bracken. Neither of them spoke for a long time. At last Hiccup said, "I got that dragon."
"I said you would, didn't I?" replied Old Wrinkly, very pleased with himself.
Old Wrinkly had taken up soothsaying in his old age, mostly unsuccessfully. Looking into the future is a complicated business, so he was particularly pleased that he'd got this right. "Something extraordinary, you said," complained Hiccup. "A truly unusual dragon, you said, an animal that would really make me stand out in the crowd."
"Absolutely," agreed Old Wrinkly. "The entrails were undeniable."
"The only extraordinary thing about this dragon," continued Hiccup, "is how extraordinarily small it is. In that, it is super unusual. I'm even more of a laughingstock than ever."
"Oh dear," said Old Wrinkly, chuckling in a wheezy way over his pipe.
Hiccup looked at him reproachfully. Old Wrinkly hurriedly turned the laugh into a cough.
"Size is all relative, Hiccup," said Old Wrinkly. "All of these dragons are super small compared to a real sea dragon. A real sea dragon is 50 times as big as that little creature. A real sea dragon from the bottom of the ocean can swallow 10 large Viking ships in one gulp and not even notice. A real sea dragon is a cruel, careless mystery like the mighty ocean itself. One moment calm as a scallop, the next raging like an octopus."
"Well, here on Berg," said Hiccup, "where we haven't any sea dragons to compare anything with, my dragon is just considerably smaller than everybody else's. You are getting off the point."
"Am I?" asked Old Wrinkly.
The point is, I just don't see how I'm ever going to become a hero, said Hiccup gloomily. I am the least heroic boy in the whole hooligan tribe.
Oh, pshaw, this ridiculous tribe, fumed old Wrinkly. Okay, so you're not what we call a born hero. You're not big and tough and charismatic like Snotlout, but you're just going to have to work at it. You're going to have to learn how to be a hero the hard way. Anyway, said old Wrinkly, it might be just what this tribe needs, a change in leadership style. Because the thing is, times are changing. We can't get away with being bigger and more violent than everybody else anymore. Imagination. That's what they need and what you've got. A hero of the future is going to have to be clever and cunning. Not just a big lump with overdeveloped muscles. He's going to have to stop everyone quarrelling among themselves and get them to face the enemy together.
How am I going to persuade anybody to do anything? Asked Hiccup. They've started calling me Hiccup the Useless. That is not a great name for a military leader.
You have to see the bigger picture, Hiccup, continued old Wrinkly, ignoring him. You're called a few names. You're not a natural at bashy ball. Who cares? These are very little problems in the grand scheme of things.
It's all very well for you to say they are little problems, said Hiccup crossly, but I have a lot of little problems. I have to train this super small dragon in time for Thursday, or be thrown out of the hairy hooligan tribe forever.
Ah, yes, said old Wrinkly, thoughtfully. There's a book on this subject, isn't there? Remind me, how does the great professor of Meathead University think you should train a dragon?
He thinks you should yell at it, said Hiccup, gloomily chucking stones again. Show the beast who is master by the sheer charismatic force of your personality, that sort of thing. I have about as much charisma as a stranded jellyfish, and yelling is just another thing I'm useless at.
Yes, said old Wrinkly, but maybe you'll have to train your dragon the hard way. You know a very great deal about dragons, don't you, Hiccup? All that dragon watching you've been doing over the years?
That's a secret, said Hiccup uncomfortably.
I've seen you talking to them, said old Wrinkly.
That's not true, protested Hiccup, going bright red in the face.
Okay, then, soothed old Wrinkly, calmly smoking his pipe. It's not true.
There was silence for a bit.
It is true, admitted Hiccup,
but for Thor's sake, don't tell anybody. They wouldn't understand.
Talking to dragons is a highly unusual skill, said old Wrinkly. Maybe, said old Wrinkly, you can train a dragon better by talking to it than by yelling at it.
That's sweet, said Hiccup, and a very touching thought. However, a dragon is not a fluffy creature like a dog or a cat or a pony. A dragon is not going to do what you say just because you ask it pretty please. From what I know about dragons, said Hiccup, I should say that yelling was a pretty good method.
But it has its limitations, doesn't it? Old Wrinkly pointed out. I would say that yelling was highly effective on any dragon smaller than a sea lion, and positively suicidal if you try it on anything larger. Why don't you come up with some alternative training schemes yourself? You might be able to add something to Professor Yobish's book. I've often thought that that book needs a little something extra. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Words, said Hiccup. That book needs a lot more words. CD 2. Six. Meanwhile, deep in the ocean. Meanwhile, deep in the ocean, but not so very far from the Isle of Berk, a real sea dragon, such as old Wrinkly had been describing, lay sleeping on the seabed.
He was indescribably large. He had been there so long that he almost seemed to be part of the ocean floor itself. A great underwater mountain, covered in shells and barnacles, some of his limbs half buried in the sand. Generation after generation of little hermit crabs had been born and died in this dragon's ears. Hundreds and hundreds of years he'd slept, because he'd had rather a large meal. He'd had the luck to catch a Roman legion camping on a clifftop. They were completely cut off, and he'd spent an enjoyable afternoon wolfing down the whole lot of them, from commanding officer to lowliest private. Horses, chariots, shield and spears, the entire lot went down the ravenous reptilian gullet. And while things such as golden chariot wheels are an additional source of fibre to a dragon's diet, they do take some time to digest. The dragon had crawled down into the depths of the ocean and gone into a sleep coma. Dragons can stay in this suspended state for eternity, half dead, half alive, buried under fathom after fathom of icy cold seawater. Not a muscle of this particular dragon had moved for 6 or 7 centuries. But the previous week, a killer whale who had chased some seals unexpectedly deep was surprised to notice a slight movement in the upper eyelid of the dragon's right eye. An ancestral memory stirred in the whale's brain, and he swam away from there as fast as his fins could carry him. And a week later, the sea around the Dragon Mountain, which had previously been teeming with crabs and lobsters and shoals of fish, was a great underwater desert. Not a mollusk stirred, not a scallop shimmied. The only sign of life for miles and miles was the rapid jerking of both the dragon's eyelids, fluttering up and down, as if the dragon had suddenly gone into a lighter sleep and was dreaming who knows what dark dreams.